back, session number 22572, Reel 2.
Reverend Eliam Claxton, Reel 2. You were saying the whole battalion was drawn up on the deck of the Reina del Pacifico.
Yes, and the commanding officer gave him a pep talk or a moral lecture about the danger of this and that, and reminded the little woman at home and all that sort of thing, you know. And then there were screens behind him, and on the screen, behind the screens were tables on which were packets of condoms. And he said, now every man will pass behind the screen, and he will take, or he will not take, he can take with him three condoms. You don't have to, it's not quite voluntary. I shall be the first to go behind. No one will know whether you have or whether you haven't taken them. I shall be the first to go, and the padre will be the second to go. And this is what happened. And, of course, we did not get venereal disease in Cape Town as a result of that. But
that was there a grand uptake of the condoms?
Well, I think most people took them. I did on principle take one. But a lot of my friends took them, and they didn't use them, but I mean they took them.
Just well, for, you never know what's going to happen, do you?
You never know what's going to happen.
Now, in France, you were in the frontier area with Belgium for a number of months. The weather got very bad during that winter. I think I'd say it was a very cold winter. 1939-40. Can you tell me what happened when the war started on the 10th of May?
Yes, what happened to me was something I didn't like at all. I was told by my senior chaplain that as I was the only Church of England chaplain in the brigade, I would leave the Dorsets and go to the advanced dressing station where I would see the wounded of all the three battalions. Worcesters, the Camerons, and the Dorsets. That is not a pleasant thing to have to do when the war starts. The padre disappears to the base. Didn't please me at all. Well, I had to do it because I was told to do it, and I had to live with the advanced dressing station. We drove up to meet the enemy in Belgium. The Dorsets were actually in reserve at the time, doesn't matter, but they were in reserve. And the advanced dressing station took up their residence in a pub, a place called Hal, very nice pub. But I managed to cover up myself by, every morning, immediately after breakfast, I would go up and join the battalion, so nobody really knew I'd gone. And this went on for some days, really. And then one day I went up and there was no sign of the battalion. And I said to my driver, Solis, you know, the British Army never retreats. So we go on and find the enemy, or we go and find them. So we went up towards where the Germans were coming from, straight up the road, 2 or 3 miles. Funny thing was, I couldn't see any people about. There were cats and dogs and sheep and horses, but no people. And I said to myself, something wrong here. You see, I said, if we have advanced up this road, well, there would have been some follow-up troops, you know, supply lines and so on. I think we'd better go back and, I don't know how far away the Germans were, but not very far, I think. So we turned round and came back, and I saw some men in a slit trench looking at the enemy with tin hats on, camouflage. And I strolled up to them and said, who are you? Where, the Dorsets were in reserve. I said, who are you? Where are the Royal Scots, 4 Brigade? I said, you're waiting for the Germans. We're waiting for the Germans, yes. So I said, well, then none up the road for 2 or 3 miles. You have a little relax now. And I got in my car and drove on. Back to the pub. And I found that the publican, the place again was deserted, no people about.
The advanced dressing station had gone. The advanced dressing station had gone, had it?
Sorry?
The advanced dressing station had gone.
They'd gone. They'd disappeared. Yeah. They'd gone completely. I don't know what had happened, you see. I was completely...
When the Dorsets had been in reserve, had they been dug in?
They were dug in around a lake in Joinville, it was. Lake Joinville, a lovely place. Lovely part of the world.
What sort of trenches had they dug? Do you remember what the positions were like?
Well, yes, they were about 6 foot deep and, you know, just ordinary trenches.
Were they two-man trenches or one-man trenches?
Two-man, or sometimes three-man. Two or three-man, really, but you couldn't steep three men in a trench, but you might manage two.
Do you have any idea of what sort of length of front they were covering?
What?
Do you have any idea of what sort of length of front were they covering with their slit trenches? How long was the battalion front?
Oh, goodness gracious me. It varied an awful lot. Mm. Every point was covered you could that you covered. It was a very strategic decision as where you put your trenches.
Yes.
I've no idea how. I wouldn't know. It depended much on the countryside you were fighting in.
Yes. But, I mean, on that occasion, when they were in reserve, do you know how long the front was?
Well, they were in reserve. They weren't on a front at all, really. Mm. They were just waiting.
But they were dug in.
Yeah. They were just waiting. They were just scattered around.
Yeah.
As a reserve battalion, ready to move.
Mm. When you moved forward on the 10th of June or 10th of May or after, when you moved forward, did you go with the advanced dressing station?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. What? How were they carried forward? What sort of transport did they have?
Oh, we had ambulance, and I had my little car. Mm. And they had their vehicles. Quite a good transport situation, really. Quite a lot of vehicles.
Was it a smooth move forward?
Oh, yes. Mm. Perfectly smooth. I've never seen the Germans at all.
Mm. What about the Belgians? Did you see anything of them?
The Belgians? Not much. Mm. Little bit. Later on we saw them on the way to Dunkirk. Mm. But not at that point. Mm. They were very friendly. Mm. Our publican was very friendly. I was telling you about him. He was on... When I got back to the pub, he was ready to go. He was with his two suitcases in his hand and all ready to go. And he said to me, "Ah, monsieur, my stamina, it is yours. You may have it." I said, "What do you say?" He said, you may have my pub. It is yours." And he went off. He gave me the keys. Now, what would you have done?
Given them back to him, if I could... If I could, I'd have given them back to him.
Well, I didn't think of that. He went off with the keys. I had the keys in my hand, and I had a car and a driver.
Mm. Might have given him a lift.
Well, what I did was, in fact, I thought that some of the contents of his pub might come in handy at some point. So I went down the cellar with my driver, and we carried cases of champagne and cases of beer and cases of brandy and put them in the back of my little car. I had a little Austin 7, I think, or something. And off we went. We eventually ran into the crowds of people on the road to Dunkirk. I found the battalion.
Where were they when you found them?
They were all on the Fürstenberg Canal. Oh. And they were defending the Fürstenberg Canal. And they were in the positions which in the First World War the Germans had been. So they were reversed, completely facing the other way. Mm. But we were actually in a blockhouse? I can't remember what you call them.
Pillbox?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which had been occupied by the Germans in the First World War. Mm. And the adjutant of the battalion was a very precise young man. He'd been ADC to the governor of Bengal at one point. And he was one of my companions in my journeys into Lille. And he was very keen on his wine, on his brandy and things like that. Fussy about what he drank. He came in with a very nasty wound in his shoulder, looking as white as a sheet. And I said to him, "Peter, what you really need is a good, stiff glass of brandy." And he didn't sort of react, except by sniffing, saying, "Is it good brandy?" Which I thought was quite an extraordinary thing to say, in that he had his brandy. Well, off we went after that. We continued. Then we came to a place where there's a road junction, and it was quite impossible to get the car through. Mm. Absolute chock-a-block. No way of getting through. So there was my little bar. But I did see, in a field, you know these Belgian roads are very high up, the field down below, I saw a wheelbarrow. So I got the wheelbarrow out, and I put into the wheelbarrow what I could of my precious cargo of booze, and we started off marching towards Dunkirk. And then, believe it or not, but this is perfectly true, out of a little farmhouse came a staff officer, beautifully dressed, with his boots shining, his red tabs glowing. And he said, "Come along, you chaps, march like soldiers." And there we were, dragging our way, me and my wheelbarrow. There came a point when the wheelbarrow couldn't be pushed any further either. It had to be abandoned.
Were you still with the battalion at that
stage? No, I wasn't with anybody. I was just one on my own, making my way to Dunkirk.
What about your driver? Was he still with you?
No, I'd lost him. I can't remember what happened to him, but he wasn't with me. I was on my own. Mm. And I arrived in Dunkirk entirely on my own. And when I got there, I found the quayside was full of stretchers. They were going to the beaches, you see. They were going a different way. And, I mean, I was really in the way in the battalion, in that situation. I couldn't do anything. Mm. So it was better to me to get out of the way, really. I was on the quayside of Dunkirk. Stretchers were lined up waiting for a hospital ship which was due to come in that night. And I saw my old friend Joe Chamberlain, the doctor, who I told you about early on, amongst them doing what he could. And he said, at one point he said, "Look, they may not let you onto the hospital ship. You're not a doctor, you see. But there's a destroyer just come in called the Express. I strongly advise you." And I said, "I'm going to get onto it too," he said, "because they may not have me as well either, because I didn't belong to any. We better get onto that." So he put me on this destroyer.
How did you get on? Directly off the quay?
It was actually by the quayside, mm. up a ladder. And the moment I got on that destroyer, I felt, well, I'm my old friend the Navy, of course. But I felt absolutely safe. It was one of these rather misty days, so we weren't bombed, mercifully.
Had you been attacked from the air on the way back towards Dunkirk?
No, we weren't. We weren't, mercifully we weren't. There were a lot of attacks there, but further down towards Dunkirk. Mm. We weren't attacked at all. I was very, very lucky.
Do you have any idea of how long it took you to get from Festubert to Dunkirk?
Festubert to Dunkirk. 4 or 5 days, I suppose, 6 days. I know I slept 4 days without sleep, mm. without sleep at all.
Just moving all the time?
Moving all the time. I was nearly left behind because when you had a rest, you went down to a cellar if you could find one.
Yes.
And but the battalion moved. I was with the battalion at this point. This was before I got my... I think I had my car then. I was asleep on the floor in the cellar, and the battalion moved on. By the grace of God, one of the officers, the young eye officer, who only died the other day, actually, came back just to see if things were all right and found me asleep on the floor. Mm. Otherwise, I'd have been in the bag. I wouldn't have known anything about it. I was very lucky. But there we were. I got on this destroyer, the Express, and we sailed out across the channel, and I was allowed to go up on the bridge and talk to the officers. They were absolutely marvellous, looking for hostile aircraft and so on, through gas and pointing out this and that. They were wonderful people. Then we got to Dover, and there we were, met by the WVS, cups of tea and coffee and biscuits and so on, put in the first train which came along. The train that I got into arrived at Bulford, and I got out there, and then I... In the camp, Bulford's an army camp there, of course, still. The camp was occupied by the Australian division that I mentioned to you early on at Cape Town, was there in full swing. And when we'd recovered a bit, I walked down the road, and I saw a couple of diggers with their bush hats walking towards me. And I had my 3 pips on my shoulder, which I displayed. No sign of a salute. They ignored me completely and utterly. So I thought to myself, I show these so-and-sos how to behave. So next two I saw coming along the road, I shrugged my shoulders. I saluted smartly first, you see, and said, good morning. And they stopped in their tracks in utter amazement and looked after me. And they said, what's your cock? They were quite extraordinary, that division. They used to swing on the chandeliers and, they made an awful mess. Oh, and they had a wonderful trick. I noticed the roof was covered with, looked like parachutes. They would take a handkerchief, they would put a drawing pin into it, and put a penny behind it, and then fling it up against the roof. And the penny would fall down, and the drawing pin would keep it in the ceiling. They were an extraordinary, undisciplined lot. Well, as I say, they were sent back to Australia eventually. This is the early days.
When you were on your four-day movement towards Dunkirk, in amongst the press of refugees and so on, do you remember seeing anything like a defensive perimeter on your way into the...
No. It was just a road leading endlessly towards Dunkirk. Crowds of people, civilians.
How do you know which way to go? Were you just carried along with the stream, or did you have anyone to direct you?
Well, every now and then, when you could. I mean, that incident when the adjutant was wounded.
Yes.
I'd found the battalion then. Mm. I was with them at that point. But there was no good my going off with separate companies all over the place. There was nothing I could do, really.
Mm. Was there anyone signing the way or pointing the way along the route to Dunkirk?
Anyone more?
Signing the way to Dunkirk.
A witch in the way?
Signing the way, showing the way. And were there any military policemen about, for example?
I don't remember military
traffic?
Policemen at all.
No.
I remember that staff officer I spoke about. There must have been about somewhere. Mm. Well, you couldn't lose. There was only one road anyway. And everybody was going along that road. You just went with them. Mm.
Did you see anyone from the French or Belgian army on the road?
No, not really. I had seen one or two Frenchmen in the early stages of the war, where he just said, many wounded, we have many wounded. But I was with the battalion most of the time.
Mm.
And I mean, quite often we would sit in a pub and wait. I remember sitting once with the commanding officer, and a shell hit the house next door. He was a very brave man. He didn't move. He just took his tin hat and put it on and sat there. But one was very fortunate. I mean, you saw houses completely wrecked with still a bowl of goldfish swimming about, you know, that sort of thing. I used to play the piano if I could find one, you know. I think there'd always be in England, that sort of thing, you know, to try and people would sing round about.
When you got to Balfour, who was there? Was that where the battalion ended up?
No, the battalion went. They were on a different train. They went.
Yes.
They came back.
Mm.
I think a bit later. They went up to Yorkshire.
Mm.
I joined them about a month later, because I got in touch with a war officer. I want to be with my battalion again. See? But that's when they were settling down to do training, up in Hornsey.
Yes. What did you do with them then once you? You rejoined them at Hornsey. What were you doing there?
Training like mad.
Mm.
Exercises. A lot of exercises arranged. I had to do, I mean, my three battalions, I was still part of the brigade, were scattered all over. The Camerons were in Beverley. Mm. The Worcesters were in Hull. We were in Hornsey on the Yorkshire coast. Strung along the Yorkshire coast, of course.
Mm.
So companies were separated, and just kept in touch with them in the ordinary way. And I spent a lot of time travelling around, taking church services where I could, making friends with the local people. This was then we started more seriously doing concert parties. We got a very good concert party when the Flamers, the dance band, came into existence. There was a lot to do, really. We didn't really start education at that point. We were still training too hard, I think.
Mm.
But and exercises galore on the Yorkshire Moors, the Whitby Moors. Always a headquarters in a pub, of course. By this time, Joe Chamberlain had become doctor, and we were working together all the time, really. In Hornsey, it was, again, a rather phony war, though we had to be careful in case of attacks from the sea. One or two people were lucky to have their wives with them. They were allowed to have their wives, they could find accommodation, but not many.
Do you remember, did you have any invasion scares while you were at Hornsey?
Oh, yes, we had. And we had one day when we saw, I think, 7 German bombers shot down. Not over us, but over Hull. They made an awful mess of Hull, the centre of it. But we were lucky not to be bombed at all where we were. We played rugby. I became a sports officer then. I was captain of the rugby side. We played cricket. And that sort of thing. So we had plenty to do.
Do you remember anything about the sort of exercises they were doing? What sort of style of exercise they were doing?
Well, the Germans were over there and we had to attack them and so on. You know, it was not the usual kind of thing. And you had to work out how to use the countryside, where to put your position and so on. Mm. No, that's what they were, really.
Were these all purely infantry exercises? Mm. Were they all pure infantry? Or did you have other arms
involved? Depended on the country, really. We had a regiment of tanks. Can't remember who they were now, but they were very, very important. They were with us all the time. Mm. The division, of course. They were divisional troops, or brigade troops. I'm not sure which, really. But divisional troops.
What was your role on exercise? Were you supposed to...
I was a padre. I did what I would do in the field, really. Be with the RAMC.
Yes.
And I became a stretcher bearer, really. A spare stretcher bearer. That's all one can do. Mm. You can't take services. Mm. You can deal with a burial.
Yes.
You can, if there was a burial, I would deal with it. Mm. But you do, yes, that's all really. You just see what the opportunity is and take it. You know, here I am, a useful man, I'd do something. Or even running with a message or something like that, you know. On the exercise. And in battle too, really.
Did you have any burials as a result of...
Not an exercise. I think we may have had one or two sort of mock ones.
Yes.
You see. But not real ones. No bodies left around.
But when you came back from Dunkirk, you said it was about a month before you got back to the battalion. How long did it take you to recover from the retreat?
I'd recovered I had a month in Bulford.
Yes.
Well, I was very comfortable and I was very well looked after. And we had leave, and I was quite recovered from all the, whatever it was.
Well, you must have been very tired physically when
I
got back as a result of walking for 4 days.
Yes, but a month's good rest is long enough, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, I was very fit then. And then we moved from Hornsey to Borough Bridge.
Yes.
Selby, first of all. Mm. And we were moved to Selby. Where the same sort of thing continued, the same kind of
training.
Selby Abbey. We had parade service in Selby Abbey. That's quite amusing, really. And then we moved from there to Borough Bridge. And, most of our time, I remember, was part of the parade services and communion services, was playing games, sports. And playing in the dance band.
How did you keep fit?
Hmm?
How did you keep fit?
I don't know what.
How did you keep fit?
Keep fit?
Yes.
Well, I was all moving about. Mm. We went on route marches, of course. Mm. I went on a route march. And, you were moving around all the time. I never, never sitting still, except when you're playing the piano. Mm. And it was... we didn't have any special PT class or anything. We were just,
You didn't do the early morning PT then? You didn't do the early morning physical jerks?
No, we didn't do that.
No.
We didn't do that. Mm. I didn't do it anyway. I think some people might have done, depending on the company commander. Mm. Our commanding officer, our second in command, a chap called Geoffrey White, who wrote a book about it called Straight On for Tokyo. And he used to have a medicine balls, which he used to play around with in his bathing trunks. And I never forget the day he came. We were walking around the camp when he was doing his thing. I heard him saying, "Fookers, Fookers," that's his Bart Batman, "what have you done to my balls?" Which caused great amusement.
Who were you answerable to? You said that you would have liked to be further forward in France when you went into Belgium, but the assistant chaplain general told you you've got to be at the dressing station.
Well, I ignored him afterwards. Yes, I saved the Dorsets.
Yes.
I wasn't brigade chaplain in any sense of the word. I mean, it was such a mess, you couldn't...
Yeah. But, I mean, to whom were you answerable? Did you consider yourself answerable to the commanding officer of the battalion or to the chaplain's line of command?
Oh, the commanding officer of the battalion. Mm. I forgot about the chaplain's branch.
Yeah.
I never saw any other chaplains. Mm. I don't know where they were, what they did. I have no idea. Mm.
So you were really part of the battalion?
Yes, really.
Yeah.
Except when I was on my own.
Yes.
Which, in France, we were. Mm. But I was always part of the battalion. Mm. I was always a Dorset, more essentially. Mm. But the other people were sort of... I did what I could for them, you might say, but I was a Dorset, basically.
Some commentators say that during this long period of training in England, the troops got bored and frustrated because they wanted to get on with the war. Mm-hmm. Did you notice that? Did soldiers become fed up?
Yes, you got a bit fed up at times. You were very glad when something was going to happen. Mm. We eventually went down to the Cotswolds, to Banbury, and we weren't there very long. Lovely part of the country and wonderful place for doing exercises in, the Cotswold Hills.
Yes.
But we then got our marching orders to go abroad, and that was a great joy. We were delighted when it happened, and we were sent off in a most wonderful way. Our battalion, the whole brigade, I think, the division, I expect, were inspected by Winston Churchill, no less. He came and inspected the battalion. King George VI came and inspected us. So we felt we were... This was 1942, of course. The war was getting on.
Did they speak to the battalion? Did Winston Churchill and the King speak?
No, they just inspected. They came and saw us. They just wished us well. We had no idea where we were going. Absolutely no idea where we were going. You talked about what happened up in Yorkshire. We'd had a very cold winter, you know, and a lot of snow on the ground, and the companies were cut off. Forward companies couldn't get the ration trucks through. And we were all set digging for snow, getting snow off the roads, you see, when we read an order from Div HQ that snow clearing will not interfere with training. Well, we were clearing the snow to get food to our forward companies.
Yeah.
That's the kind of silly order we got.
Mm.
And then we got into this, up to Glasgow, the Clyde. The division assembled there. And we got into a convoy of 18 liners with an escort of two cruisers and a dozen or so destroyers sailed down the Clyde one evening. Well, one thing happened. Sitting on the Clyde, a young soldier was standing by my side, sort of tears rolling down his cheeks. And I said, "Well, can I help anyway?" He said, "You see that house over there? So that's my home. My family's living there." Well, I almost wept, you know, because you were going to the unknown for heaven knows how long. But the last memory we had was the sun setting over the Isle of Arran as we sailed down the Clyde, this enormous convoy. And that's the thing we carried with us for a long time. Mm. We went right across the Atlantic, the other side, almost to America. Very rough. A lot of people were seasick. We weren't used to the sea. Then we got another of those wonderful orders from division. Seasickness will cease forthwith. Well, we went up there, and then we went... No, well, the incident. I think things happened on the edge. We didn't know what was happening. We won a ship called the Rhino del Pacifico. We arrived in Freetown, where we saw people. We anchored there for a bit. Didn't go ashore, of course. And then eventually we got to Cape Town, which I told you about early on, about the condoms. And we